and that's the one that's going to carry passengers, you know, six passengers and two crew members. So they released pictures of their interior. Now that this thing has already flown into space on test missions, they fixed up the cabin. They showed what that's going to look like, and you know, the seats that they have, and how they fold down, and they show these handrails that are going to be attached to each window as each person gets to look out. And it's just a vehicle that's going to go suborbital and then come back down. It's originally going to be launched from New Mexico. And you're going to have customers paying $200,000 or more dollars each to do this. Essentially, basically, have about 6 minutes of weightlessness. You know, they're going to get past the Kármán line, which is 62 miles, so, 100 kilometers, and then come back down and land on the runway. So, well, we'll see how that might work out. They're going to be taking off from Spaceport America, they call it, in New Mexico. You know, how many people are going to be coming out with this COVID virus going on? I can see that they're almost ready to actually do what they're doing. People have paid a fortune in down payments and everything to do this. But are they now going to come out, you know, sit in a tight little vehicle with, you know, six other people? I guess. I don't know. But we'll have to see. And that's called Spaceship One. That's the name of it. They actually gave it a name, Unity. Unity is the name of the vehicle. Any questions or comments? This is WS2N.
KD2NVB.
AT2LR.
I should know your name, but I don't. I keep forgetting. AT2MVB, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to LR. This is Bob, KD2NVB. It's not the exact subject you were talking about, but I read an interesting kind of opinion piece in the science section of the New York Times last Tuesday. Some journalists talking about an opinion among some in the science community, including them, that they're concentrating too many efforts on Mars at the expense of, you know, other worlds like Venus or the you know, Titan and some of those other interesting places to go in space. I was wondering if you knew anything about that, any opinions. Yeah, that's all. Back to you, Paul.
Well, Bob, you know that budget has increased. It used to be a couple of years ago, $18 billion, and it went to $19, $20, and I think it's up to $21 billion. They're trying to get $25 billion out of it now. I see a lot of problems in Congress right now. But still, you know, they're just working on $21 billion a year. $4.5 billion goes to the maintenance of sending crews to the space station. Other money goes to airplane development. Other money goes to science missions to, like you said, Europa they want to send an orbiter eventually to Neptune and Uranus. So, you know, these things are slightly funded. They're able to develop them, but, you know, some of them don't have any hardware. Some of them are paid for. You have Psyche, that's going to go to, actually, the moon Psyche, that's actually called an asteroid in Jupiter's Lagrange point. So there is a satellite spacecraft that's going to go there that's funded. So something that's funded. WFIRST is funded, from what I understand. It's a space telescope. James Webb Space Telescope collected, let's see, almost $10 billion since they started working on it probably 10 years ago. You know, before you know it, all these billions of dollars keep adding up, and, you know, will they be short on money? Maybe. Mars, that's the SLS. I think they're putting around $3.5-4 billion into that every year. Space Launch System with Orion. So that's in constant development. And that's the one that originally was going to go to Mars. Now they've changed plans. Let's let it go to the moon. But eventually that will change again and go back to, you know, to launch to Mars. They got one or two ways. Either start cutting programs to do other big science projects, like putting an orbit vehicle in orbit around Neptune or around Uranus, or pay more money to use the taxpayer dollar. Percentage wise, we're paying a very low percentage. Apollo missions, the gross national product, whatever it was at the time. I forget the percent that was going into the space program. They say right now it's probably less than half of that, maybe 25% of whatever that was. So could they go more? Yeah, they could. Could you get the political will from Congress to do it? I don't know. I'd like to see it. I'm a big fan. Any other questions, Bob? Back to you.
82 MVP. Actually, the main thesis of this article actually is called Too Much Mars? Let's Discover Other Worlds. And the thesis was that of the money that's, I guess, just to send, like, spaceships to a planet to explore it, almost all of it or lots of it's going to Mars, and they were saying, oh, we already have so much data on Mars because we've already done a bunch of them, and we still have a lot of data we haven't even sifted through. Meanwhile, we know very little about, you know, Europa, et cetera, Venus, whatever. And supposedly they said something's got scrapped, like something to, I don't know if it was Europa or Titan, it was something that was scrapped from yet another Mars thing. So it was of, not trying to get more money from Congress, that wasn't the thesis here, it was like, of the money spent on, that's already spent on going to planets, they were kind of saying, why is it all going to Mars rather than let's diversify? Anyway, that was the thesis of the thing. Back to you, Paul.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, you know, they, like this Perseverance that just got launched, I think that was $2.5 billion, and so was Curiosity. That's been riding around since 2012 on Mars. So, you know, I mean, yeah, they could divert some of those funds, you know. Right now, they're planning on another launch to Mars in 2026. With the help of the European Space Agency, to take some samples that Perseverance will dig up from the Mars surface and then bring it back to Earth. It's not funded yet, but I mean, it's on the drawing board. Will that get cut? Will that get cut maybe to fund that Europa project? There was something called the Europa Clipper. That's a go. Europa Clipper is funded. And that's the one that's going to orbit Jupiter and keep coming very close to Europa, on a regular basis. They originally had, that was the plan. Then they decided, let's put a lander in as well to land on Europa, too. We'll have the orbiter and the lander. And from what I understand, that lander is being cut because the funds aren't there. So, yeah, could you cut the Mars sample return mission and then pour that money into Europa? I guess you could, you know. There's only so many dollars to go around. So, well, okay, very good. Thanks for bringing that up. I don't know what's going to happen. And then as time goes on, let's say they do fund Europa instead of the Mars return mission. As the decades fly by, somebody's going to say, well, okay, let's do the sample return mission. So that's what happens, too. Some of these things, they don't die. They just get put in a warehouse for a while, and then I'll reopen it again. Any other comments or questions?
H2LR.
I heard Kay come, you came in with the ID. I'm on the selfie machine.
Okay, tourism, and it's people are making a lot of money.
Are you in and out for some reason? Something different on your end?
You can't hear me?
That I heard clear. I heard that you can't hear me. That was 100%. But your previous transmission, no.
Okay, I think this is better. Would they be able to quarantine the space tourists for 2 weeks before they take off? That way they know they've had as limited contact as possible with contamination before they get into the spacecraft?
Oh, absolutely. That's, right now they would have to do that. Would those space tourists want to do that? You know, they want to come out. They want to train to be an amateur astronaut for, I think, 3 or 4 days at the facility that SpaceX is operating in Spaceport America in New Mexico. It's all set up. You know, they're going to train these guys whoever signs up. And they have facilities for them to stay there. So instead of staying 3 or 4 days, I guess, sure, they could stay for 2 weeks. But, again, would those people want to spend that time there? I guess if they're really gung-ho, they probably would. I'm glad you brought that up, because when you saw the crews working on the Dragon when it came back today, all those crews have been quarantined 14 days. All those people on the ship, all of them, that's what they did. So even that type of a job, you're being quarantined before you're allowed to go out on Go Navigator, and that was the name of the boat, bring back a spacecraft. Very good. I don't see why they can't do it. I hope this thing doesn't go on long enough. I don't think this spacecraft's going to get off the ground for another 6 months, at least. So maybe they'll have hopefully a vaccine or something by then. Back to you.
Thank you. This is AC2LR.
Okay, fine business. But I have my doubts about that, too. I think we're in for the long haul. I don't know if Roy might make a comment on that one. But I think I'm just getting used to wearing a mask. That's it. Back to you, Roy. AC2GSWS2S.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul, and thanks again to Andy for Andy's Corner, and thanks to everyone who participated tonight. And just to comment about that last little bit, I don't know. Hopefully there'll be a vaccine. Hopefully it'll be safe and efficacious. Hopefully it'll be out sometime the earlier part of 2021 rather than the other end of 2021. But, you know, my crystal ball is very, very cloudy. I wouldn't book any sea cruises for the time being is all I can say. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, I want to remind everyone once again that if you have any mailbag questions or topics or puzzles or things you want me to tell Paul about, the email address is mailbag@gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Links to a whole bunch of things, impedance matching calculator websites, some interesting YouTubes, some material on this inexpensive spectrum analyzer, and Neil Goldstein's presentation on his nano VNA is all on my link page, which you can find by just typing in roy.ac2gs.com. And as always, Mike, KC2NJI, has his archive files up on his website, amateurradio.tv. The archives go all the way back to September of 2006. So take a look at them and take a listen. They're very entertaining and informative. And as dear Dick used to say, be kind to each other. We live in dangerous times, and we should look out for each other. And once again, I caution you, do not let fear eat you up, and don't just deny everything. You know, decide on an educated, informed way of living your life, and take as few risks as you need to take, and be well. And I hope we'll all be together again next Sunday night when we do this all over again. So this is AC2GS wishing you a safe week. Be well, and I am clear.
Yeah, Paul, wonder if you're still there. WB2BX, so couldn't get the word in edgewise on Echo Link.
WB2BXO. Yeah, go ahead. Now I hear you.
Yeah, okay. I was doing something else on the computer, so couldn't quickly break away and let you know in the chat that I was trying to get in here. In any case, just curious. I noticed on this mission, there was a so-called blackout period when they were passing through the ionized plasma on the way down. And I don't think that's happened in a while. I think in the more recent shuttle missions, if I remember correctly, NASA was able to receive shuttle transmissions through the Tegra satellites, even during the heavy ionization. So I was wondering whether SpaceX doesn't have access to the same satellites, or there's something about the capsule design that makes that not workable. Go ahead.
Yeah, I remember that too. I thought it had to do with, I'll look into it, I'm not sure. I thought it had to do with the Tegra satellite more or less being directly overhead when the shuttle came through. So, you know, it definitely wasn't TV, but, you know, telemetry and voice, they tried to get through on a couple of the shuttle missions. Whether or not that succeeded, I'm not sure. But you might remember, like, STS 107. That was the Columbia. They lost. They came through an ionization part there, so they had a loss of signal. They knew that, and then they thought, well, okay, well, let's pick them up again, and they never came back. Of course, the ship broke up. So I think it was on a couple of flights they were trying to do that. But if you look at all the progress missions that come down, Soyuz missions that come down, they have blackout times. And of course, all the past missions, Apollo and Gemini and Mercury, you know, they all had ionization problems. But the shuttle, I don't think they ever fixed it. I think they tried to do something to see if they could. You know, the satellite was directly overhead. I remember reading something about that, but whether or not they accomplished that, I don't think they did. Back here.
Yeah, okay. I think I remember the communications working during the so-called blackout period a couple of times, at least a couple of times on the shuttle. I mean, that was a long time ago already, but okay, I'm not imagining things since you remember it that way also. Anyway, that's interesting that for some reason they're not set up to do that on the missions. I remember listening to the recordings of the Columbia disaster where they saw on the radar that the vehicle had broken up, and I recall the last transmission where they said, "Well, we're getting high temperatures in the wheel well. There's something going on here. Okay, we're looking forward to it." And then suddenly there was a burst of noise, like, uh-oh, we've lost the downlink. You know, a little like what happened on Challenger, but, you know, anyway, you know, I do remember that. Anyway, very interesting. The Dragon landing was interesting today. That was something. I mean, SpaceX really rehearses these things to a fine point, and it seemed to me like, with the exception of that the NTO glitch, which I suspect they weren't all that surprised at, there were really no problems. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really was. And like I said earlier, I'm looking forward to the next one when four people will be going up. I'd like to see Boeing get past some of the problems that they have with their Starliner. But then we could have two different vehicles going up. And that's what NASA planned on anyway. They, you know, in case one is down and broken for some reason, the other one could pick up the slack. And that's for Starliner. And that has problems. They sent up the one, you know, without a crew, which is what they all, you know, that's what they have to do. They have to send it up, dock with the space station, and then come back and land. That one didn't end up made to the space station. All kinds of problems with the timing on the computers, and so they just deorbited it and safely got it back. That one lands on land, and that'll eventually have a crew of four as well. So the next flight was supposed to be with a crew, and they were going to have a crew of three on that one. And then they changed their mind, and they need to duplicate what they didn't do. They need to send the Starliner back up again without a crew, dock to the space station, and then return it, similar to what SpaceX did two marches ago. And then once they do that, the next flight would be, you know, if it was accepted by NASA, it would be a crewed flight. So maybe middle of next year, I'm going to guess, it would be the earliest for that to happen. Back to you. I keep forgetting your name. Bob. Back to you, Bob. Bob CXL.
KC-103.
Stand by, Sam. Let's let BXO try to get back in. He's on Echo Link.
Okay, the carrier finally dropped long enough for Echo Link to let me transmit. Yeah. Well, the evil one loved Boeing, so as long as he's in the White House, which will hopefully not be much longer, Boeing won't lose the contract. And a lot of other people in the space establishment love them also, I guess. So, you know, even if they screw up, they're not going to lose the contract anytime soon. But it's good to see that the Dragon mission went well. That's the important thing for... perseverance and ingenuity get off the launch pad. That is interesting. They overloaded the receivers on the space network, and you'd think they have attenuators in line that can flip in on the front ends of those receivers. I guess nobody thought of it. You know, rather than having to go to the side lobe of the antenna. That's interesting. Nobody thought of that. Anyway, I know there's somebody else waiting in the wings here, so I'll let them have it. B2BXO, Frank.
Okay, Frank. I concur with you. I concur. Well, I just What about the workers at Boeing? That's what, you know, all the people that are doing the work, I want them to keep going. I want them all to keep going. We need, in fact, we need more. I'm on another company. It's called Sierra Nevada Corporation, SNC. They're going to be here sending a vehicle up, and eventually that will be manned many years down the road. We'll see. 73, Frank. I hear Sam, and then after Sam, I'm going to sign. KC1SAM, WS2M.
Comment in 1YDY.
We don't want to talk to you, Hank. KC1SAM, hang on. Sticking it up. Yeah, thanks for sticking in, Paul, by the way. And, my question is kind of simple. One is, but I think I know they've had a lot of people up there before. They're going to have an extra person. My question was supplies and O2, but I imagine they get their O2 from breaking down water, which is probably the most logical way of doing it instead of setting up O2. So could you confirm that? And regarding the last transmission, the only thing you don't want to hear in the last transmission is someone say, gee, I wonder what this button does. Anyway, over to you, Paul, and I'll be clear after the answer, and that's accurate. Why do I think?
Okay, Sam. Yeah, they do recycle the oxygen, but they do send up free supplies now and then to, it's called top it off, you know. It'll go up on any of the cargo missions. Progress, we force them up on the last one. A couple hundred pounds, 3,000 pounds, square inch tanks. And signals will bring it up. And you can drag it. You have these cargo vehicles like the HTV by Japan. They bring that thing just brings up a lot of stuff. So, you know, they'll bring up extra gas. The water is pretty much 99%, you know, recycled. Whatever water is on the space station, that's it. I'm sure they put my top off to some degree, but they say like it's 100% or 99% recycled. Okay, the other station, now I've got your call, sorry, I just jumped in there. Go ahead, this is WS2N, Paul.
Yeah, hi Paul, it's Hank in 1YDY. And I had a question. I had seen a YouTube video where the author of the video suggested that the reason that Sierra Nevada wasn't picked as a possible competitor for those first two slots in the program was that it was owned by a couple of lawyers when they originally had the orbiter design, and that NASA had a predisposition to pick Boeing, who they thought would be the best contractor for the job, even before they saw the specs, and that Tesla was subject to a lot more inspection than Boeing was, simply because they didn't have a history with NASA, and because of the nature of the owners of Sierra Nevada, that they were almost summarily dismissed. Have you seen this video by any chance, and would you have any comment on that particular analysis?
I didn't see the video. Sierra Nevada, the president is a woman, and her husband's heavily involved with it as well. And they've probably been making products for space for the last 40 years, 40 years. I don't know why they would dismiss them. I know they wanted to get contract for manned flight, but they didn't. Then the next time they came up with a cargo, all the cargo money was distributed already. But then the next time they needed more companies for cargo. They did include them. So they are included. They are guaranteed 6 flights to the space station. 6 cargo flights with their Dream Chasers. And as the years go by, I think they will develop a manned vehicle out of that. In fact, that's what they were doing. They developed the original ones that they tested and landed And I had windows on it and everything. I'm seeing that. Dream Chaser. Yeah, somewhere down the road, you're going to see that thing become a manned vehicle. What other station was there? Somebody else said something. Okay, I thought I heard another station. So back to you, Frank. I don't know much about it. The politics behind that. You know, Boeing's been at this, you know, forever. So is Lockheed Martin. For instance, the Atlas rocket that goes up, and the Delta Delta IV rocket that goes up by NASA, they were all built by the United Launch Alliance, which is a consortium of Boeing and Lockheed that teamed up together to do that work. So, I don't know. The politics behind the space program is tough. You know, they figure out sometimes a 4-year, you know, 4 years out, and said, you know, they might change the administration. You know, one day we're going to Mars, and then 4 years later we're going to the moon. That's part of the problem we have. I'm surprised NASA is able to keep up with it. Back to you, Frank.
Yeah, okay. I think the point of the video was strictly that the politics of it were influencing the technical decisions. But, you know, again, I don't know much about it other than having seen one video, and I certainly am not qualified to judge that kind of stuff myself. All right, thanks for the response, and I'll let you guys get back to it. So, Paul and Sam's out there, and I'm sorry, there was another guy, I don't remember his call. So I'll say goodnight to you all, and one whitey-white clear.
Okay, thanks for coming on, Frank, 73. And, I'm going to clear, so, Sam, if you're still listening, and anybody else, have a good night. Tomorrow's another day.
Yeah, just to thank you, Paul, for your report, especially for sticking around. I'm kind of tired, too. So, Casey, when I see him, I will be clear. And enjoy chatting with you, as always. And you too, Hank. Take care.
Okay, 73, Sam. Good night. And Hank, same to you. WS2M clear.
Sir, this is Paul. Frank, WB2BXO. Talk to you next week.
I heard you, Frank. 73. Thanks for coming on.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
KDC1, DYA listening.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
KA2AHY listening. KA2YHY.